Welcome to the Cognac Expert Calendar Podcast, hosted by Taylor.
So today I'm very pleased to be speaking with Noé Tesseron from Tesseron Cognac. How are you doing today, Noé?
I'm very well. I'm very pleased to be with you and Cognac Expert.
Fantastic. Always great to speak with you. So can you tell us who you are and what you do at Tesseron Cognac?
Of course. So Tesseron Cognac, we are a family house since four generations. So I'm fourth generation myself with my sister Justine. So we've been basically producing cognac since 1905. It's originally my great-grandfather, Abel Tesseron, who started this in 1905. And he was a viticulture and already a big collector of old cognacs. And some of his collection we still have to this day. That's what actually is very unique about us, is this incredible collection of cognacs. But for 100 years, basically, we didn't have our own brand yet. We used to harvest, distill, and age cognac and supply big and smaller houses with old cognacs already. And it's only 20 years ago that my father decided, because we have this amazing collection of old cognacs and this production of more than 100 years, to start bottling under our own name and by focusing only on XO, so on the kind of very old cognacs and unique cognacs. So it's a young brand within an old cognac house, if you will.
Very nice. So I'm going to get into some general questions about Tesseron Cognac soon. But can you tell us what cognac we are tasting today?
Of course. So we are tasting one of our most beautiful blends and kind of one of our humbly most iconic, if I may, which is the Lot 29 XO Exception, which is actually sitting in, you know, one of the oldest cognacs we actually commercialize, bottle and commercialize. And it is a very beautiful blend of eau de vie that have been aged for more than three generations. So just that most of the cognacs in that blend have been distilled by my grandfather or my great grandfather. And it's a blend of Uni Blanc, Colombard, and Folle Blanche. We still have the three varietals planted actually in our property in Bonneuil, in Grand Champagne. The first. And of course, 100% of the cognacs in that blend are from Grand Champagne. At that age, that's what you want, really.
It's the eau de vie that can last that long, I guess.
Exactly.
So for some of our listeners who might only be learning about Tesseron Cognac, can you give a quick presentation of some of the different cognacs that you make?
Of course. So, as I said, we are really almost a UFO in cognac, in the sense that we only bottle very, very old blends. The youngest, there is one exception to that, which is called Composition, which is a younger cognac, a bit more fresh, a bit more fun. But really, on 11 cognacs that we bottle, 10 of them are XOs. And we start the collection with the Lot 90, which is the youngest of our XOs, which is between 10 to 20 years, basically half a generation in oak. And it is part of what we call the classic collection, which goes up to more than three generations with the Lot 29. And for a very, very long time, Lot 29 was actually the oldest cognac we used to bottle and offer, until a few years ago, my father created the most extreme of cognacs, which is named Extreme, which is basically a blend of eau de vie dating back from my great grandfather's collection, all in the Midrand. So yes, Lot 29, you are already talking about, you know, cognacs that are out of age, out of time, really.
Yeah, I mean, you mentioned that you basically only make XOs, but a big majority of your cognacs are very old XOs, we could say.
Yes, of course. Well, it's obviously the cognacs that we bottle the most are the youngest of XOs, but talking about youngest of XOs is very relative, because the youngest of our XOs is, you know, 10, 20 years or half a generation. And then straight away, you move on to the next one, which is the Lot 76, which has been aged for more than one generation. And then the Lot 53 had more than two generations. And then the Lot 29 and more than three generations. So it's all relative. And obviously, it's a very small production. It's still very confidential. But I would say what makes us unique is that we are able to sustain a production like this. And we work very hard to be able to sustain that that positioning and that production of exceptionally old cognacs for the next generations. If I'm able to offer those XOs today in the volumes we do, it's thanks to my grandfather and my great grandfather and my father actually. And I'm working hard so that when I have children or grandchildren, they are still able to offer the same quality. And that's very, very important, is that the Lot 29, for instance, that we have been offering 15 years ago is the same than the one we have today and has the same quality than the one we will be offering in 20 years. And that's the most important thing for the house, is to preserve that exceptional quality.
Fantastic. And so you have how many hectares of vines, and in which cru are they situated in?
So we have a small vineyard. Technically, it's 40 hectares of vines. So we have 15 hectares in Petite Champagne, in Saint-Surin, which is very close to our office and distillery. Basically, we are based in the small town of Châteauneuf-sur-Charente, and Saint-Surin is on the periphery of Châteauneuf, where we have 15 hectares of vine. And our main property is the 25 hectares in Grande Champagne, the first cru of cognac, in Bonneuil. So it's 10 minutes from our distillery, basically. And we have cellars there as well. It's a beautiful hill. It's limestone and clay terroirs. It's really the heart of Grand Champagne, with the best terroirs to make cognac that will be aged for many, many generations. And back in the days when we used to be a négociant or supplying houses, we used to have actually a much bigger vineyard, more than 100 hectares. So the production was very significant. And that's why we have such a big collection. Proportionally speaking, what we do today commercially in terms of volumes compared to the volumes we actually hold in our cellar is considerable. The proportion is much smaller, you know. So we are able to preserve that quality.
Okay. Now, do you still sell some eau de vie to big houses, or are you fully independent today?
We are fully independent, and we are often approached because people are aware we are hiding a few rare cognacs in our cellars, whether they are in the cask or in demi john already in the paradis. But you know, we keep everything for ourselves, once again, to be able to preserve that quality. And it can happen that we complete our collection. Sometimes some people will approach us with a small lot of rare Grand Champagne, old Grand Champagne, and we taste it. And if we believe it can complete the collection and it has the quality and the price is right, of course, we buy it. But a big, big, big majority of what's in a bottle of Tesseron has been coming from our own vineyard.
Right. And I think I heard you say a few minutes ago that in the past, you used to supply old cognac to the big houses. Did I hear that correctly?
Yes. It's we were a négociant among many others. We were quite an important one. So we didn't have any specific contract with any specific houses. We used to work with a lot of them, big and small. But we were already the specialist when a big house, without not naming them, needed to complete one of their blends of one of their old XOs. I would say they used to come to us first. You know, we were the specialist for that. And all our production and the way my great-grandfather, and my father, you know, anticipated things was in the idea of being able to sustain that positioning, you know. So it's very rare that cognac we used to distill would be sold quickly, you know. Most of the cognacs we sold were already have been sitting in the cellar for already quite a long time.
Yeah, it's really interesting and rare. When I talk to other producers, most are selling to the big houses, but they're selling Comp Zero or Comp Two. So yeah, let's take that. I take it as a compliment for the house that they came for you for your old eau de vie.
Yes, and you know, not only they came for it, but we kept a big part of it as well. And that's, I have to thank the previous generations for that, is that they were, you know, smart enough to, or selfish enough maybe to keep a significant part of the production for themselves and for the future generations. When you think about the notion of time, and especially today, working like this and seeing things for you know, in 10 years, in 30 years, and maybe in several generations, it's rare these days. And that's how we are able to
to offer cognacs like Tello 29.
Yeah, absolutely. So you are also the owner of the wonderful Chateau Ponticene down the road in Bordeaux, and also Pimerey in California. Does Tesseron influence the winemaking production, and vice versa? Does the winemaking production have any influence on Tesseron, or are they in different universes?
It's funny because it's very similar and it's very different at the same time. Obviously, on you know, when it comes to going out on the market and promoting our wines and cognac, things the people we meet and we share these bottles with are sensibly the same people who are looking for having a good time with a great Pauillac or a great XO, sensibly the same people. When it comes to production, I think the main influence that the cognacs have had on the way we work on the other properties is this notion of time and trying to anticipate, and everything is done for long term. When you think about any decision in any vineyard, when it comes to wine or cognacs that is made for the long term. You know, when you plant a new part, you won't see the result of it until many years, and qualitatively really many, many more years, you know? And so I would say it's this long-term thinking that comes from our cognacs. This is our roots. And, you know, the rhythm of the life of wine property is much faster. One vintage pushes another, and the minute you are finishing wine somewhere, you need to already talk about the next one, you know? So the pace is much faster with wine, but thanks to the cognacs, we learn to try to make decisions over a long time, you know, and to that every decision matters. And when it comes to the things that can help us on the other way around, in the conduct of the vineyard at Ponticene, we have different means, and we are always experimenting with many things when it comes to farming in general, and that there are practices we try to implement in cognac or sometimes in California. There's a lot of it's a big learning experience for us, but at the same time they are very much apart and different. So yes and no, it's very linked, but at the same time it's very different, you know.
I see. Okay. So as you are a small cognac producer, what are some of the challenges that you face today as a small cognac producer?
Well, I would say we have challenges, and being small brings challenges, and at the same time we are brings advantages, if I may. We are very adaptable in the sense, and we are a small house, and you know, our master blender, Romain, master of cellar, Romain Martial, sometimes I see him on a tractor, sometimes I see him with visitors, and it's the same for me, you know. And when it comes to we always try to accommodate, you know, even when it comes to our customers or suppliers, things like that. But being small, the difficulty is, you know, we all think we have the best cognacs, you know, and, you know, even if you have the best cognac, you need to get the word out there. And we have limited means in terms of communication and marketing. And so our best use of resource is to get out there, to open a bottle and to show what's in the bottle, you know. And that's a big, big, big difference. But you can only spend that amount of time out there. And so I would say that's the limit of it, is trying to reach more people with that. But at the same time, people are very much looking for this kind of product. And not only in cognac, in champagne as well. When it comes to grower, champagne, things like that, people are interested, I think, and a certain clientele in houses that have the actual product, you know, small houses that work. Everything is artisanal. Everything that we do, we take time to do it properly. We have our own vineyard, our own distillery. We age our cognac, we bottle them. And people are looking for that, I think, and that's what the small houses can offer, is the actual product, authenticity, and diversity as well.
Absolutely. Yeah, I agree. And would you say that climate change is impacting the region, and in what way?
Well, it's very difficult to answer. Generally speaking, all through the years, the temperature obviously more are hotter all through the year.
And the biggest difficulty we have is the uncertainty of climate. And sometimes you can have heat wave, you know, early spring, and you have bud break, and then you can have frost. But it's always been the case. Mildew is also a big issue that can intervene in the vineyard, which is has no impact on quality, but on yields. And that's the issue is with, I know it's not something you hear a lot these days, but if you want quality in cognac, you need to have quantities of cognac. So wine to distillate, you know, to distill. And the more you have a nice, good harvest, the more you can distill cognacs and have more stock in your cellar. And the more stock you have is like having more colors on your palette when you're a painter, you know, and you can play with those eau de vie, blend them together and have a very homogeneous level of quality in your cellar. And so in order to do that, you need to have a decent crop, and climate change is not helping with that. But, you know, at the same time, vines are very resilient plants. And when you see what we are doing in California at Pimray, you know, we are on top of Mount Vider. It's a small mountain. It's only 7 hectares of vines, but it's dry farm. There is no irrigation, which seems normal in Europe because we have a lot of rain. But over there, there is almost no rain. And when you see how the vineyard is doing well and how luscious it is at the end of summer, despite all the vegetation around being very poor or burned, you realize, you know, pretty sure vine can handle a bit less water and it would just evolve, you know.
Yeah. Okay. And then before we get to the Lot 29 again, you mentioned the cellar master. Can you tell us again, what is his name? And can you say a few words about him? I don't think we talk enough about the cellar master.
I completely agree. So especially Romain has been with us for, I think, almost 20 years now. So Romain Martial is our master blender. He's also responsible for the vineyard, conduct management as well. So from day one in the vineyard to the bottling, he's the one responsible for the quality of everything that's happening in the bottle, you know, which is very, very important. And he's actually the second generation from his family to be cellar master at Tesson Cognac. His father, Jacques Martial, was our cellar master for many years as well. And they worked together for 10 years. It was a very long learning experience. And, you know, there is no school for cellar master technically to this day. It's not a job you can learn on the, you know, in a classroom. And so having the luck to have Romain joining us a few years ago with his father, you know, it's, he knows every single eau de vie that is being aged in the stock in the cellar by heart, like his own children. You know, he's one with the house, and that's a unique job in the world. I think about it, it's almost a perfume maker. There's so many different things that come into that fall into his job for the house.
Okay, so let's get back to the Lot 29. So what can you say about this cognac that maybe you haven't already said?
I think the best thing to say is to try it, because it's a very unique cognac. And I have to say, every time I open a bottle of Lot 29 and I put a glass in front of somebody, the eyes start to open, and people are very, very receptive because it's really a unique cognac. Basically, it's a blend of eau de vie that have been aged for more than three generations. And technically, you can age a cognac for that long. Some of the oldest cognacs that we have in the cellar have been aging for up to 80, 85 years maximum, until we consider they reached their full potential in terms of quality. And plus, we want to stop the evaporation, the energy share. So to stop that, we, at this point in time, we transfer them into bonbon, in damjan, demijohn, that are kept in the Paradis cellar. And basically, the Lot 29 is a blend of some of the oldest and best cognacs in cask and some of the youngest in demijohn. So that's what I love about the Lot 29. It's sitting in between both worlds, you know, cognacs that are in cask and cognacs that are really out of time in those time capsules that are sitting in our Paradis cellar, which are really history, you know. So when you pour a glass of Lot 29, you are pouring history. And what I love about this blend is that, and that's to me exactly the what cognac is all about, is the art of blending. And you have such an old cognac, but at the same time, when you taste it, it has still a lot of life. And that's the beauty of blending. It's even with very old, smooth, subtle cognac, you can bring it back to life with just that additional eau de vie to make it still useful and very enjoyable. And it's exactly representative of the style of the house, is to make cognacs. And obviously the fact that they are old is in that sense, but that are very subtle, very smooth, very easygoing, but at the same time, still very aromatic and very fruit forward. And I think Lot 29 is exactly sitting there for, I introduce it to people who are big, big cognac lovers and they love it. And people who have never had a cognac in their life or who are not in any way big spirit drinkers. And we are always very surprised at how accessible and smooth it is, you know. So that's what I love about the Lot 29.
Not a bad first cognac for for somebody getting their introduction with the Lot 29. That's cool.
Yeah, I think if you start your cognac education with Lot 29, it's hard to taste anything else after that.
So you said also that it has three different grape varieties, Uni Blanc, Colombard, and Folle Blanche. How many other cognacs in the range possess all three grape varieties?
All three, technically, you have four cognacs that have the three grape varietals. And, you know, there is a point in time, for example, we are talking about Extreme earlier. Extreme is kind of our prized aged cognac, dating back from a great grandfather's collection, all in Damjan, in the Paradis. Even sometimes the varietals that we don't even know about, because at this point in time, we have no record of the exactly what's in the blend, you know. When you are talking about cognacs that have been distilled in the 19th century, it's impossible to know what was in there, because it's the result of blending over years, over decades, over several generations, to be finally put in under glass and at some point picked up and put within a blend, you know. So the traceability is impossible, and that's what makes it lovely as well. So you are drinking history, but it has its share of mystery, you know. And the grape varietals themselves, they have, you know, Uni Blanc is still a big majority of our vineyard. It's the backbone of any good cognac. It has really all the characteristics you're looking for. But having the other grape varietals and being able to play with it, it brings a lot of different dimensions to a blend. And for example, Colombard, it's a big structure. It's very dense, almost has a viscosity to it. It's almost syrupy. It's very smooth. And Folle Blanche brings a lot of elegance, aromatics. It's very flowery on the nose. It's a very aromatic grape varietal, so that's what will bring a lot of use to the Lot 29.
And when you say three generations, is it correct to say a generation's like 25, 30 years approximately?
Yes, exactly. Like we are a family cognac house, so we took the habit of talking about generations. and yes, it's exactly that. One generation approximate to 25 years, basically.
And can you say something quickly about the cellar conditions? Humid, dry, somewhere in between?
So we have actually a bit of everything, which is, I mean, what we want at least. So we have, most of our cellars are in actually within the town of Châteauneuf-sur-Charente, around our distillery. Some of them are on the properties as well, in Saint-Surin and in Bonneuil. And we have a bit of everything. We have some underground cellars, some cellars that are in much more basic, I would say, buildings that are a bit drier and more exposed to outside conditions and variations. But that's what you need. And we have actually some cellars. So on this cellar is in Châteauneuf under my grandfather's house. It's an old crypt where monks used to come and pray. And it dates back to the 12th century. So it's a very, very old cellar underground, all in stone from the time. And this is much more humid and has a much more consistent humidity level and temperature. But what we want is these differences, these variations, is having this damp cellar, a dry cellar. So your stock is evolving differently a bit everywhere, and it allows to play with those variations in order to have diversity within our stock. And it goes the same for our barrel producers. We work with three different barrel producers, Sanso, Taranso, and Radu. And each of them had their own style almost. It's very close, but very different. So it allows to have more diversity, you know.
Okay. And if we get into just a short tasting note, how would you describe the nose and the palate of this uber complex Lot 29?
Oh, you can talk about that for an hour, because what I love about the Lot 29 is when you are talking about cognacs of that complexity, you know, it's the number of different eau de vie that compose the blend will make it evolve so much in the glass. So from the moment we pour it in the glass and the moment we have our first sip to the last sip, maybe 20 minutes later, it will evolve so much more. But you have a lot of fruit, still fresh fruit on the nose, but quickly you arrive in notes of what we call rancio, which is those buttery, almondy notes on the nose. I love to compare it. It's like an old butter you leave out of the fridge for a bit. And that's typical of very, very old eau de vie. You cannot fake that. If our youngest cognacs will never have rancio notes. It's a good way to know what you have in front of you. And Lot 29 is fully on that. You have those leathery, almost cigar tobacco notes, but at the same time, a lot of fruit, of prune. This is just a very lovely and complex blend, and it evolves so much in the glass.
It's very complex. I would even say it should be tasted over an hour or 2 hours just to smell it and take one's time with it. Now, last question before I let you go. For somebody who's just learning about Tesson Cognac, and they want one cognac to start their journey with the house, how do you recommend that person begin?
Well, as I said earlier, if you start with the Lot 29, it will be hard to get down from that. But I think very good introduction, a first introduction. If you are afraid to drinking spirits, because still, you know, even if they are very smooth, they are at 40 degrees. And we make a cognac, a younger cognac, which is called Composition, which is a fine champagne, half grand champagne, petit champagne, which is basically sitting in between the VSOP and the XO from 4 to 10 years. And it's a great cognac to make with cocktails. And I think it's a first introduction to have a few notes of cognac coming out from a cocktail, you know, it's already a good introduction. And if you want to move on to the actual real world of cognac drinkers, then a Lot 90, which is the youngest of our XOs, sitting at half a generation in of aging in oak, is a very good introduction because it's very fresh, it's very easygoing, and you never have that burning aspect that may be a barrier for somebody. And it's never too sweet. It's a very, very pleasing and accessible cognac. So I would say that is a very, very good introduction. And I'm not even against, it's not a heresy for me, for a young XO, to put, you know, a little bit of Alice in it. I just came back from the US and people sometimes ask me if I can do that. And I don't want to be the guy saying, oh no, you should absolutely not do it. Maybe not with a Lot of 29, but with a Lot 90, you know, why not?
Sounds good. Well, Noé, it's always a pleasure talking with you. Thank you for your time. The Lot 29 is fantastic. So again, thank you. Bonne fête. And I'll look forward to speaking with you and seeing you again soon.
Thank you very much, Taylor. And everybody, enjoy your Lot 29 and Merry Christmas.
Thank you for listening to the Cognac Expert Calendar podcast. Tomorrow is another day, another cognac.